the Dirty Sports Podcast. I said, welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast with Andy Ruther and Joe Prano. Welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Dirty Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Ruther, coming to you live from Cincinnati, Ohio, with my co-host from Port Hueneme, California, Joey No Chill Prano.
Hello, Andy.
Good morning.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, man.
You got your Chappelle hat on?
Dayton. Yeah, I got my Chappelle. Dude, I got my Chappelle show hat on. I bought a Chappelle hoodie. I dropped a few bucks at the Chappelle store in Yellow Springs.
Yeah, I saw you sent me and Randy Ruther a message this weekend. You're up in Yellow Springs. What was the occasion for the – how far is that from you? What was the occasion?
So it was approximately an hour and 16 minutes from my house.
Approximately.
That's what – when I put it in, you know.
Yeah,
put it into the old technology. Just a getaway. That's like a little getaway spot. I've never been there. And it's pretty fascinating to go. It's such a small town. Like the population's under 4,000. It's crazy that Dave Chappelle lives there and he basically owns the town. But also, my girlfriend and I were laughing because it's a very hippie town, very progressive politically, and we just thought it was pretty ironic that I'm not exaggerating when I say every shop, restaurant, business has a pride flag in front of it. And with his jokes and transgender jokes on his last I don't know how many specials, like, that's ironic to me. Yeah. Right.
And I mean, I guess his argument would be he's a hippie too, and he's not saying anything that's blah, 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 blah. But you sent me you sent us a message. You said he's already got a firehouse that's being turned into a comedy club. Is that correct?
So it is. So get this. So it's basically one street. I love like Yellow Springs. This was just a one nighter because we had not had a one night away since our daughter was born 13 months ago. So this was like our first, let's just get away. It's called Yellow Springs because they have yellow springs. It's like a hiking area. You know, it's nature, waterfall. That's the
most Ruther description. It's called Yellow Springs because they have yellow springs.
So we wanted to just, you know, get out of town, check it out. And I knew he was converting an old firehouse to a comedy club, but it's the most Chappelle thing ever. There's no website. There's no Facebook page. It's already been up and running for about a month.
It's all open.
All that's in front of the comedy club is like the C I have on my hat. Just a C. That's it. One C. No signage, no coming soon.
Everybody knows what that C around town means at this point.
Oh yeah.
And I sent you the joke. I was like, this firehouse now identifies as a comedy club. Smacks Mike on knee three times.
Yeah, so I didn't know.
It's transitioning, fam. You're going to love it.
So I go to his store, which was, there's one hotel in town. We stayed in the only hotel in town. And right next to our hotel was his store. And I asked the guy, I was like, so what's the deal with the comedy club? And he's like, it's been open. He goes, there's shows tonight. I was like, tonight? He's like, oh yeah, dude, they sell out. He goes, they only go up on Ticketmaster and they, you know, the place seats maybe 200. It's a small club.
Yeah.
They sell out instantly. And he's like, yeah, Dave's got a show tonight at 8:30. And I was like, well, who's performing? He's like, I don't even know. It's one of those things you don't know. And then I put in Ticketmaster, Dave Chappelle, Yellow Springs, Burr's coming out here. Bill Burr's coming out in a few weeks for like a week. I guess the move from what everybody in town told me was Dave will bring out a buddy. They'll stay at, he has a whole compound, a farm, a guest house. They stay and just work on bits for a week. small room. They pack it. Security is next level, I was reading. So not only are your phones locked up, Prano, you're not allowed to have any Apple Watches. They take those. You can't have jackets. They're worried about people recording, you know, in their jacket. So basically, you got to give them everything. And he just kind of messes around.
Pretty cool.
It's crazy, though, because when you're at his level, like, you don't hear that, right? It's just nuts. I was talking to the waiter at our hotel at the restaurant, and he's like, dude, Dave's around all the time. And it's like, you know, in our town, he's nobody. He's just a comedian, and he's chill. But it's also, that's what I'm saying. But I was like, he's also one of the biggest comics ever.
Yeah.
In such a small town. I don't know. I think the whole thing is kind of fascinating and cool.
I mean, what's interesting is, you know, you said the club's only 200 people. It keeps it pretty quiet. No, nothing getting, you know, filmed and sent out to the rest of the world. It's a very tight knit group. It's much like our Substack, basically. Like, it's better when, you know, we don't have to do the whole social media thing and whatever. It's like, come in, join our little online Dave Chappelle like sports community on Substack. It's better. We can trust you more. You know, the way Dave can trust his audience, not to put it, we can trust you more. Like, I threw up a episode 12, The Denting, the first DS throwback. I was like, the paid subscribers, they can be trusted with OG episodes. So that's up. And then, of course, Andy, you put in our chat today that the live link, we weren't sure how lives were going to work, but you put a live unlisted link into our chat on Substack today. Now, you were feeling quite generous and you were like, this would be for all the subscribers. So maybe some folks who are on the fence about subscribing, or maybe some folks who found our name through Substack. Maybe you're here and you're watching, and welcome. And I was like, make them pay, Andy, make them pay. And you're like, nah, man, first week. We can give it to all the subscribers. So I guess if you're on the fence, you could just subscribe for now and then worry about pay later. And Andy will continue to put out little breadcrumbs to lead you into his lair.
Well, Here's my thing. Here's my thing. I like how you turned me into a pedophile. But here's my drug dealer.
Like, you want a little taste? First one's free.
I understand. I see all sides of it, guys. And trust me, I've read things. I see, like, Reddit is popping off with different opinions. You can subscribe to Substack for free. I'm not saying you got to pay and be a paid subscriber. I'm not out here saying that. Substack is for free. And I will give a lot of stuff for free. Joe will give a lot of stuff for free on Substack. So it's not all behind a paywall. Now, throwback episodes, which, for the record, people have asked for years. Dirtballs have DM'd us for years. Hey, I would pay to get old episodes. I would pay. Well, guess what? Now is that chance. Joe put up the episode after my traumatic brain injury, which is coming up on 10 years in a few weeks. I've actually never listened to the episode myself.
And I said, I did a little preamble just of some of the things that jumped out to me as I listened to the episode. One thing was, Andy, it was episode 12. And I said, we've done twice as many episodes since the 1000th episode as we had ever done when this was released. 12 episodes, no song to start, 12 episodes in, your face is, I mean, you could hear the man dangling of your face. You don't even need to see it.
So it's my
speech.
A lot
of F's and P's and B's. Yeah, you can't.
My speech is very slurred.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I even forget it. Like, after that happened to me, I had to do physical therapy, not just at home, but, you know, at a hospital. I had to do speech therapy, for people who don't know. So my speech was so jacked up. The truth is, I'm very lucky and fortunate, and I feel blessed that everything worked out, because I was a mess.
What's funny is, I feel like, and I think you'd agree with me, I mean, it was certainly a life-changing moment for you in terms of the not drinking, in terms of whatever, but I feel like you definitely became like a softer Andy Ruther after that. And What's funny is at the end of the episode, you're so angry and you're suffering succotashing your anger toward like the medical staff. And you're like, if there's anything about this, it's that I'm even more fucked the world now. And I was like, geez. And then I feel like it actually had the opposite effect on you in the end. You're like, no, I'm not afraid to say anything. I almost fucking died. You're like, fuck that doctor.
Oh man. And you know what's crazy about all that? I also forgot all the drugs I was on. Because obviously when you have a traumatic brain injury and you have hemorrhaging and all the things that happened to me, I came across, you know, with my mom, with like her passing away a few years ago, I have access to a lot of stuff of hers. And I came across an old email that she's sending out to people updating my health. And I forgot. She's like, Andy's got to be on these drugs. There's all these potential risks for seizures, all this stuff. And I was
in
like,
the episode you're talking about, I was like, you got any painkillers? And you're like, no, relax, fam. You're like, I only have anti-seizures. I was like, well, maybe if I take like five of them, I'll feel something. just junkying out.
Yeah, I think I was on steroids for like a month at least to reduce.
You said that steroids, anti-seizure medication.
Yeah, so maybe I'll have to go back and listen. But again,
you have to. It's honestly amazing. It's like, and that's why I said it's like it would be really easy for us to like go up in a weekly, but it's like, you know, it does have to be like sifted through a little bit just to like see what's, you know, what's you can still say, what you can't still say. And I honestly, I was pleasantly surprised, like nothing. And I guess I know us, but like, you know, I think there's everything has context and everything was ever like, there's nothing said, anything I edited out, nothing was like negative. Nothing was like attacking people. It's just like straight up, you know, you're just like, wow, can't say that anymore. Even like jokingly. So some stuff's out. But a lot of stuff remained. I was pretty loose. I was pretty loose with like, I mean, not that much came out.
Well, again, that's one of the benefits of being a paid subscriber of this. We're going to be able to venture into those things. Even Friday, like Joe referenced, I put out the Every Day I'm Thustin', my hit rap single in the dirty sports world from 2018, I believe.
It's already the biggest hit on Substack. I mean, at least on our Substack. We put a lot of things up. It's like 3 likes, 5 likes. Every Day I'm Thustin' drops, and people are just like, this is why I paid $7.
By the way, almost ended my relationship with Brittany.
Really?
She's like so embarrassed.
Just at how cringe it is?
She was trying to leave the room multiple times when I was playing it. Then when we were up in Yellow Springs, she couldn't because we were in the hotel room in the bed. I'm like, you're listening to this. She's like, no, I can't. I just can't. I this is going to be so awkward for me. I cannot listen to you rapping. And I was like, you are. You're going to listen to me rapping. And yeah, it's cringe as shit. But maybe I'll drop
that's
a
why
new
we,
one.
That's why we love you, Andy.
Yeah. And one last thing about Substack.
Lil Cringe. That should be your rap name. Lil Cringe with a K. Lil Cringe.
I want to let the dirtballs know, you and I, guys, there's nothing set for how we're going to do Substack. That's the truth. Like, it's kind of a fluid process. Again, some things will be behind a paywall. Some things will be for free. But I know people are adamant, I've seen, that we have this plan. I'm being honest with you. There is no plan.
I'll tell you honestly, like, I feel like Andy just last week was like really treading lightly into this with like, you know, like he was walking on thin ice. He's like, I don't know, man. And now just this morning, I knew you were getting the bug when Every Day I'm Thustin' dropped. I was like, oh, Andy sees this stuff can go. He can trickle out his little rug nugs, little rugged nuggets. So yeah. And then, and you know, being able to put out old episodes and all that stuff, it's like, I just think that this is kind of what the world has become, in terms of like, I don't want to call what we do art. Let me just say, but like, air quotes, art. Like, you just got to find your niche and stay, you know, and just deliver for your niche of people. And that's just, you know, we talk about like the falling ratings in the NBA and stuff like that. It's like the NBA, again, like they have a global audience. They it feels like almost every decision they make is thinking about the audience globally, as opposed to, oh, you know, the NFL that might be thinking, it's just like figuring out what your audience is and targeting them. And, you know, you were saying, oh, I'm seeing stuff on Reddit. I'm seeing stuff on that. It's like, I got one DM. Oh, actually, I got one tweet and then I replied to the DM. Somebody saying like, I just can't afford another subscription. And like that kind of thing is like tough, you know, when you're like a dirtball can. And I messaged, I forget the kid's name, but I messaged him and I was like, sorry, dude, it's just like, you know, it's where it's at. And he was like, I'm going to cancel my wife's Hulu. And I was like, all right, so you're back, baby. But like, you know, other than that, like nothing but positivity in everything. And you're like, oh, Reddit. I'm like, this is why I don't go on Reddit. You know, well, it's like, well, am I surprised that there's some negativity in there? No.
But I don't care. Like the negativity doesn't bother me. And again, I even posted in there. I'm open to everyone's opinions. That's the truth. And I appreciate everyone's opinions. If people don't want to subscribe, I would never give them hell for that. I'm not going to be, hey, you know, you're dead to me. That's not me. Cause I understand, obviously I have a family now too. You know, we decide things we want to pay for. I totally let everybody know. I totally understand that. But also understand, I want to address this. There's no notion that we're going to fully be behind a paid wall on all fronts forever. Like I just want people to know that we're kind of winging this, so to speak, right, Joe? Is in like we're figuring this out. This is something new.
And dude, the same way we did the podcast in the beginning.
Yeah,
you listen to the denting episode, which was an hour and 3 minutes long before I made some edits, and now is an hour and 4 minutes long because I added 5 minutes of like preamble. So it was right around an hour. It's like you can hear at the end of the episode, well, that's it. Like hours here. That's it. We got to wrap up. We're at an hour. I mean, the idea that we started this podcast and we're like exactly one hour once a week. And the next thing you know, it's twice a week. And it's an hour and a half, and it's 2 hours. And sometimes it's 2.5 hours. And then it's back to an hour and a half. Sometimes we figured out what worked, and we're going to do the same thing over here. Is every episode going to be behind a paywall? Our half? Is it going to be part of each episode? We don't know. We got to figure out what's going to work for us the same way we did when we first started a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the move going forward. And I'm open to anybody's opinion, and I can respect that. And I'm not going to take anything personally. I totally understand. But I do want to say, Substack has been so supportive of us. I'm talking about the people at Substack. Shout out particularly to Austin. It's like we're on the homepage right now for, I believe, this week. For Substack is trying to help us grow within that community. So the notion of there can be no growth, I don't think that's true at all, because Substack themselves is trying to promote us, trying to help us grow.
Yeah, introducing us to a whole new pool of people who may have never even heard of us. Maybe they're not the kind of people that, like, you know, played around in the muck and mud that was like the Twitter world or whatever. You know, it's like it's a different space, and we're getting an opportunity to meet or be seen by different people. And like I said, we're playing it by ear. I said today, you know, Andy and I were talking about like, oh, going live on YouTube was always like a part of the thing, especially since we went to Zoom, and especially or went to StreamYard. And even before that, when we were in Spot Studio, I was like, oh, we might not be able to do that for a minute. Substack is apparently getting like a live video thing. And then I was like, why don't we just put an unlisted feed up and give it to our paid subscribers today? And Andy was like, why not give it to all subscribers? And I was like, all right, you're more generous than me, but like, I'm down. Let's go.
No, 100%. And that's, again, I don't want to delve too far into this. We probably have already gone too far, but guys, that's where we're at. So if you still want to be a part of the Dirtball community, we obviously are always going to welcome you. Just subscribe. I'm not saying you have to pay. Just subscribe to the app. There's tons of great content on there. That's not just podcast. There's great blogs. There's great writers. It's a good community, and we're not going anywhere. So we're going to be here.
DirtySports.com.
Yeah. And one
and
last thing.
And the other thing is it is a great place to have a centralized conversation for us, because one of the first things we're going to talk about on this show is something I brought up to Andy that we already have, we disagree on. And I'd love to hear the Dirtballs weigh in. And that's the other thing with Substack, is like not having to go on Reddit and see what people see versus Instagram DMs versus Twitter DMs versus the random Dirtballs who will text me out of the blue. Don't text me your sports opinions. All that stuff, like having one centralized thing. So I can just go on and be like, because this is truly like, I would love to hear what everybody thinks.
Yeah. Especially this next discussion we're about to have, but I want to address one last thing. Cause I see we have a comment, from Shay about this. I've seen comments in our DMs. Any chance of the Kobe Bryant shot challenge being released on Substack? 100% yes.
Now, is the Kobe Bryant shot challenge, was that still available? Wasn't that available on our podcast forever? I thought there was like a, that was one of the ones we like kept up when we got rid of a bunch, wasn't it?
We'll see. There definitely is going to have to be some edits in that one.
Yeah. But I feel like you edited that one already once, but I could be wrong.
I think you're wrong. Okay. But just again, that's a prime example. You guys asked for it. You guys are paid subscribers. Hey, do you want to see the Kobe Bryant shot challenge? Which again, this isn't new. People have asked for this for years behind a paywall. Guys, ask and you shall receive. And to be honest, for me, it's kind of fun. Joe probably felt this way last night, to go back and listen to something. And you're like, wild. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We went.
No, it was wild. It was a wild experience. And I said that to somebody. They're like, why don't you just put them all up? And I was like, we have to go back and listen to all of them. and listen, as far as the Kobe, I said something the other day when I did the Knicks live feed. It's probably dumb just to even insinuate it, but I was like, I mean, man, depending on how we do on Substack, maybe there's a Jalen Brunson shot challenge for a Knicks playoff game. I don't know if I've got it. There might have to be an adjustment to the liquor consumption.
But. Reckless. You know what that is? You doing a Jalen Brunson shot challenge is Mike Tyson fighting a 58.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like Jordan coming back and playing for the Wizards. You're like, it's not the same, but we appreciate the effort.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I really want to jump into this conversation that you teased actually last episode. And we've already had a phone call about it today. We are 100% at opposite ends on this. I think you're actually nuts the more I've thought about it. Pose the question that you posed.
So I feel like, you know, it's a very tired to me every year. There's around March Madness. And obviously a big part of March Madness for me, the only interesting thing about March Madness for me is seeing guys who might go to the NBA. And we talked to Pete Sestaro about this. I was like, who should we keep an eye on? And he was like, here's four guys in the Big East. I don't watch anything outside the Big East, which we'll get to how the Big East is doing later on. But I feel like a very tired conversation. This is something that's been going back for the hot take things, whatever. It's like, if you put LeBron James on, you know, who at Colgate, do they win March Madness? And I think it's a tired conversation of takes at peak NBA player X, put him on this team, do they win? Just so we're clear, I think without a doubt, if you take any essentially top 10 NBA player and you put them on any team in the bracket, any team, a Patriot League team, a 16 seed, I don't care. They're winning. A peak NBA player. Because you look at guys like Steph Curry, who got Davidson, what did he get him to the Elite Eight? That was when that was way before he was Steph Curry. You know, I mean, I think you even take peak Steph Curry and put him back on his own Davidson team. They win every game by 25 and they win the national championship, in my opinion. Now, that's why I think that's a tired argument. And I think the people who argue, oh, they would never beat UConn. I think you're greatly underestimating how much of a gap there is between an NBA player and your typical college player, not to mention a full-on adult NBA star. A lot of these guys go on to be stars, and they dominate where they're still figuring it out. So I've added one. I think that's a tired argument. So I have a wired argument, if you will. If you took current Nikola Jokic, about to be three-time MVP Jokic, and you dropped him on Caitlin Clark's Iowa team, does that team win the men's bracket? And I say yes.
I say they don't even win a couple games.
I think that's ludicrous. Like, here's the thing. Let me just say this. I am on record forever as saying, dude, I think the number one boys high school team, I think it's some team that's a top five ranked boys high school team, I think beats the WNBA All-Stars. I think they murder them. Like, I don't think it's close. At the same time, this is the reason I specifically picked this is Jokic is going to be unstoppable. He's unstoppable in the NBA. He's unstoppable. The NBA players can't stop him. Now he's playing with children. He's playing against children. He's playing with a shortened three-point line. And he's playing with one woman who can absolutely really shoot the ball. So she's going to have to be covered. Like, you look at Jokic as a passer. He's going to be able to get her some open shots. I think they win the whole thing.
You're crazy. Absolutely crazy. So I want to break down what you said. Which I
think Jokic is scoring 70 every game.
They're going to double team him.
Okay. They're double teaming him in the NBA.
They're going to double triple team him. I just, the notion, let me put this
is way. Where this is where it gets. Listen, they're double teaming him in the NBA. Let's say they triple team him, right? Now you're just saying, and this is not what I believe.
Well, I would play zone is what I do. You play zone.
Yeah. If you're triple teaming him, you're triple teaming Jokic, and let's say you got to keep one person on Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, but let me put this way.
So now you have four players on two. So you just have three other players who are just left open.
No. Again, you already said it. A great high school men's team is probably better than the best WNBA team simply because we have physical differences, right?
Sure.
And that's what comes into play here, which for some reason I feel like you're forgetting. The physical difference between a men's college basketball team and a women's college basketball team is night and day. We're not just talking about 100%. Height and weight. We're talking about running ability, jump ability, the whole nine yards. What you're forgetting is the guy on a bad men's team. And by bad, I mean, you've made the tournament, but you're, let's say you're a 15 or a 16 seed, is going to be the best player on any women's team.
Sure.
Now here's the thing.
I've never disagreed with that.
So a lot of these women can shoot very well.
Right.
Obviously.
So you can't just like leave them wide open.
But you play zone. So here's my take on this.
You're playing a zone, but you're also triple teaming Jokic.
No, dude, I think they win two games max.
Here's the other reason I think that they win is like you look at a team like Kentucky, which we're going to get into a conversation about Kentucky and the whole one and done thing and the blah, blah, blah. And like these teams, a lot of these teams that don't have the best athletes continue to go deeper in the tournament because it's obviously it's not just about athleticism. It's not just me. I just don't think you realize, look at what Steph Curry in his in an oversized jersey wearing braces did to the NCAA tournament. You're talking about taking full on 6'10 multi-time winning. Like, I just don't think Jokic, I think Jokic is scoring 80 points every game. I think he's just raining. Jokic has made six threes in an NBA game. Now he's just playing from the college three. Like, how many threes do you think he hits? I think he's hitting nine threes a game. I think he's just like absolutely manhandling people.
Yeah, but that's my point. They're going to put all the energy on defense into Jokic.
Can Caitlin Clark's Iowa team hit wide open jump shots?
I don't know if they're going to be wide open still.
Your defensive strategy has holes in it. I'm gonna put everybody on Jokic and cover the other people.
No, but the holes, I think, again, these guys can make up the difference. That's my point. The women obviously aren't as athletically gifted as the men. They can, let's say a girl is.
We're in agreement on that, Andy. Like, this is, we
have
this
point
whole.
Is they can make up the difference to get to them, to block shots, to steal passes.
I think just catching and shooting set shots when Jokic, the greatest
you're
passing
talking about
big
them
man,
winning it all. You're talking about them going through the North Carolinas and the Dukes.
I'm talking about Jokic going through them. Basically, really,
I don't think they get through the NC States of the tournament.
Here's the thing:
those type of teams.
I actually think we already couldn't be more in disagreement, because I actually don't think the question mark is on how you're going to stop the Jokic team. You're not going to. The question is, if you have a UNC team or a UConn and four of those people are going to be guarded by women, and Jokic isn't exactly like, I mean, he's obviously a huge guy and he can rim protect and whatever, but he's not like, it's not like he's Joel Embiid, or it's not like he's like Giannis, or it's not like he was whatever. I actually think the only question is, can that team stop an elite men's team from scoring?
And that's the thing. I haven't even talked about the men's team on offense.
Because that's actually the only thing, in my opinion, that's even worth it. I don't think you're stopping.
I think you're crazy. I think these games are straight up, especially against a top 20 men's team, these games are blowouts in favor of the men's team. Blowouts. I couldn't
disagree more. Just look at what's happened in previous tournaments. Like, the guys who played with Jimmer Fredette, no, they never sniffed the NBA. Jimmer Fredette didn't sniff the NBA. You look at Steph Curry. You look at, CJ McCollum beat Duke by himself. CJ McCollum and essentially a women's team beat Duke.
But it's not essentially a women's team. You're talking about one NBA player, now an all-time great, but you're talking about one NBA player.
A big NBA player, an elite passing NBA player, an elite shooting NBA player. I mean, I'm talking about they're not stopping him. He's scoring 60, 70 points a game. Yeah, he's scoring 60 points a game in the NBA.
And the men's team scoring 100 on the women. 100.
Well, that is really the, that's going to be the only part of the equation that's really a factor, is how do you stop the men's team?
You don't.
But can you stop you're talking about some sort of fictional triple team plus two person zone strategy. So, I mean, there is also just play straight up man, put Jokic in the middle, see if they hit a bunch of jump shots.
You're talking about them winning the tournament. You're absolutely crazy. You're talking about them winning the entire tournament.
Yeah.
That's nuts, dude.
I'm just basing this on how far great.
About them winning six games.
I'm talking about how far great college players have been able to carry teams that never belong there when they were teenagers.
But they also were playing with other college men, not college women. That's my point. They're playing with college women. Caitlin Clark's obviously an all-timer.
Yeah. So Caitlin Clark can also, like, she can shoot. If she's open, she's going to hit. So, like, there's no leaving Caitlin Clark open.
Dude,
by the way, I still think this is why I think it's a great conversation, because I'm fully on, you know, Bronny James high school team, you know, Sierra Canyon or whatever, just like dog walks every team in the women's tournament and probably every, like, I am that guy. I'm just saying, I don't think you realize it's almost as big, if not a bigger gap, between an all-time NBA player, especially one of Jokic's skill set, to your typical NCAA college player.
I think you're nuts, dude. I couldn't disagree with you more.
Well, put it in the chat, fam. Put it on your notes and Substack. Reply to this episode. Let's get the conversation going. We got to put up a poll or something.
You think they win six? You're saying they win it all, six games. That's why I said maybe they win a couple games. But as you get deeper in the tournament, the team
is better. I can tell you what. I think that they do. I'm not like 100%. You're like wildly. Like, it's going to be way closer than you think it is.
No way.
You look at these here. Now we can transition into talking about the tournament. Dude, the offense is in the tournament. Like, it's just guys dribbling around and hoisting. Like, I'm not impressed by the technique in college basketball at all. Like, I'm not seeing a team with a 6'10" NBA big in the middle just getting like decimated by like crisp offense and like, you know, them working for open jump shots. And the thing is like, I just think if you're like, oh, they're just going to blow by, you know, the women's team, it's like, okay, we are putting a 6'10" NBA player in the middle of the floor.
Again, I think they win a couple games tops. I stand by that. Nobody gets past the Sweet 16. No way.
I think they have a great chance of winning it all.
You're out of your mind.
I think if they don't win it all, it's going to be because probably some mid-major team where all the guys can shoot, all the guys are playing a fundamental game, like that they start just like banging threes in the face of women defenders.
Well, I wish we could simulate this in some sort of AI. I don't know if we're there technologically yet.
This is a great transition, by the way, into the reason I thought of this is the other night I watched a UFC fight. I got a buddy staying with me, watched another round of UFCs. I've been watching a lot of UFC lately. And we watched the marquee fight of the night was a women's fight, and they were, I believe it was flyweights. They were 120. Okay. They were 125 pounds. And my buddy has done jiu-jitsu, and I was like, listen, I'm old. I'm out of shape. I know nothing about mixed martial arts. I understand that if I got in a ring with like some 160 pound woman, that there's a great chance that she's like arm barring me and I'm like done. I don't even know how arm bars work. So it's like, I don't have any ability to defend what they're going to try to do to me. I don't have whatever, you know, boxed a little bit as a kid, you know, not like, you know, have been in plenty of actual fights, whatever, but like, I don't see myself defending. But I was like 125 pound woman. I was like, I don't care what her, I was like, that's what my nephew is. I was like, I don't care what her training is. I'm just going to pick her up and thrash her. And he was like, you're crazy. And then we actually found video of a dude with limited training fighting a woman who had been like a champion UFC. And he just like kills her. This is what brought this conversation on.
Gotcha.
And I stand by that too. Like, yeah, dude, I'm sure a you know, was it Amanda Nunes or whatever? I'm sure she breaks my leg. 125 pound woman, though, like, and we'll never find this out because I'll never fight a 125 pound woman, but I would just, you know, throw her like bam, bam, like it would just, you know, just there's just no way.
And that's my point. When we're talking about Jokic in the women's team versus the men's team, they just get destroyed. Like, you're actually helping my point.
But you see this in the NBA. Like, Jokic treats elite NBA guys like that.
That's fine. They're all NBA
I think him
guys.
Doing that to kids is like, I think he's just going to score all the he's just going to be like, you guys better not miss any shots because there's just no way that they're stopping him.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, okay. Let me disagree. Let me ask you a question. If you put Jokic on Caitlin Clark's Iowa team, when are you certain that it goes to their team? If they take out one more of their starting five and you add the Duquesne shooting guard?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know.
I mean, if you agree, whoever the 64th team to make the tournament is, you agree you put Jokic on that team, they're winning the championship, right? You put Jokic on the Colgate team, they're winning it all. We agree.
It's just, you know what? All this stuff, though, it's tough to kind of just speculate for me. I don't know.
And normally, listen, I think normally you take a women's team, I'd be like, I don't know. But like Caitlin Clark is a whole different specimen when it comes to women's team. I mean, she's shooting from the logo.
Yeah, she doesn't got a 6'10 dude who can leap out of the gym in front of her either. Just saying.
I'm just saying you can't leave her open is my point. You can't leave her open. I think their two-man game or their two-they game.
Okay.
I think their two-they game is just going to be unbeatable.
I mean, I don't know, man. I fully disagree with you on this.
I'll tell you who's not interested in hosting this at their venue. Dave Chappelle. It's like, no way! Not here if I am.
You know who's feeling good today. Pizza Starro.
Oh, yeah.
Validation.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like it's Sweet 16. It's a little early because all of the three Big East teams were what? Like a 1-2 and 4 seed or a 1-3 and 4 seed or something like that.
1-2 and 3. They're undefeated.
1-2 and 3 seed. Okay. Let me just say in terms of Pete Cestaro's validation, if 3 of the eight elite teams are Big East team, they should make Pete Cestaro, they should put Pete Cestaro in charge of bracketology. They should put him in charge of like picking the teams.
Well, look, the Big East is 6-0. Guess what the Mountain West is? 3-5.
3-5.
Yeah, 3-5. Just saying. I don't know. I mean, yeah, if 3 of the 8 are from one conference.
3 of 16, there's already certainly some validation happening. But if 3 of the 8, then you're just going to be like, yeah, I mean, obviously more teams should have made it.
Well, I want to talk a little Coach Cal and Kentucky and the shit show that is. Because so that around here, I'm about an hour and a half north of Lexington, Kentucky. So I'm in the middle of big UK country, even though, you know, there's schools here, but like there's a lot of diehards. Kentucky, and everybody is talking about Calipari and what's happened. We actually got a call. I'll start with that. We have a call from A. Milley making a comparison across sport to Les Miles. But here's the call, and then I have some stats and some interesting numbers to really delve into, you know, his tenure at this point with Kentucky.
What's up, fellas? It's your boy, Millie. John Calipari with another underwhelming season. He's been on boob watch for a while, and as of right now, he is full-on Dolly Parton. He is quadruple Z46, the biggest tits to ever exist. That is John Calipari. Prano, I think you can agree with this right here. Me and you have the same hatred for this man, but John Calipari is the college basketball version of Les Miles. He is a great recruiter. He will get players to come to Kentucky, but he does nothing with them. He only won one national championship with Anthony Davis. And you guys know the roster of Kentucky that's in the NBA right now. Y'all have discussed it. And they year in and year out, they have guys that go to the league and are successful and are good. But he does nothing with them. You got to get rid of him at this point. You know, that was the conflict with LSU. You know, oh, you get rid of Les Miles, you get rid of the recruiting. But, dude, you're Kentucky basketball. Somebody's going to want to come coach there. And, yeah, I just think you got to move on from him. Let me hear what you guys have to say. Stay dirty.
So that's kind of the discussion, definitely nationally and also around here.
So a couple, let me tackle a couple things within A. Millie's call, and then we can get to the greater kind of conversation about it. First of all, A. Millie, I think you'll really love the throwback episode that we did. Probably my first Zach Mettenberger rant was on there as well. How trash he was going to be. Me and A. Millie have been back and forth. A. Millie thought Zach Mettenberger was going to turn into a guy in the NFL. So it's there. I think it's almost an unfair comparison to Les Miles. I understand the comparison, but we also have a situation where Les Miles was essentially handed the job while the team was dominant from Nick Saban. So he really did, like, the recruiting was already kind of done. Like, you're recruiting on your recent history. You're recruiting on all the guys that Saban brought in, won a national championship, and was able to get to the NFL. You're doing all that stuff. So Les Miles, listen, what we can agree on is John Calipari, and I've said this in forever, he's not a great X's and O's coach. He's just a guy who recruits, which in college basketball can almost get it done. And where you get into trouble is you get into these tournament and you go up against teams that have been playing together for a long time, and it closes the talent gap. Now, we've also talked about with teams like Kentucky. First of all, there's a difference between Coach Cal and Coach K, right? Coach K was actually also like a pretty good basketball coach. So once he started to get into the one and done thing, he was also coaching them up when they were there. But even Coach K, like, Duke's success was way higher when the guys were sticking around longer than when he started to go that route. So there's that. But we've also talked about, we look at, like, what De'Aaron Fox, remember we had that whole conversation? De'Aaron Fox is better in the NBA than he was in college at shooting the basketball. Like, you're getting these guys who are 17 and 18 years old, and they leave before they're 18 or 19 years old. Like, the as bad an X's and O's coach as he might be, if these guys stayed until they were juniors, like, Kentucky might win every year. They might win every year if those guys stayed until they're juniors. I mean, I listened to the Roommates podcast, which is Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart's podcast, and they had Julius Randle on, and they said, how many of the guys when you were at Kentucky, like, what percentage of your roster was like freshmen versus sophomore? And he was like, we had basically an entire roster of freshmen. There's like one or two guys who are sophomores who didn't get drafted the year before. And then he's like, and then our bench is rounding it. Like, we have three or four guys on the end of the bench who are just like walk on, you know, guys who are going to play at Kentucky their whole career and never get on the floor. He's like, but basically, yeah, the entire roster is freshmen. It's like, it's hard to win when you're getting these guys there and you have 3 months to teach them basketball. That's why the like that Kentucky team with Julius Randle, they did not look good to start the year. They end up going to the final game, you know, and losing. It's like, because they're going to grow over the course of one season. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You want these guys, you want to recruit these guys who are good enough to go to the NBA, but then you only get them for 1 year. And really, it does not give you a great chance to win if your whole roster is one and done, guys. It just doesn't. So what are you going to do? Are you going to, like, you could tell him to recruit different kinds of guys, right? As opposed to you're going to replace him with a different coach. But also, how crazy is it to say recruit worse players?
Well, look, there's a few things. We always talk about the money with a quarterback. Money's an issue here. His buyout's $33 million. So, like, that has to be discussed. $33 million you have to pay him to not coach. So that's a factor, and everybody's discussing that. The second thing, which we always discuss as well with coaches, who are you going to find that's better? And for the record, I'm not saying they shouldn't fire him. I'm just posing these questions. But if you look lately, so he started real strong, right? Here's a few stats for you. Of their last 11 NCAA tournament losses, they've been a favorite in 10 of those, right? So it's like they're losing at a 90% plus clip lately when they're favored. Like, that's not good.
Of course they're favored, right? They're Kentucky. They're coming out of the SEC. They have all the guys that are going to go pro. Of course they're favored. That's a bad. It's almost like it's you can almost say, how has Vegas not figured out that, like, there teams like this are very susceptible to losing to big underdogs?
Okay, fair. But here's something too that I saw. So this is from Calipari's own book, which is wild. All the Kentucky fans were posting this. And this is talking about the two previous coaches before him, Tubby Smith and Billy Gillespie. This is from Cal's own book, his own words. He says, when Tubby Smith and Billy Gillespie won two NCAA tournament games in 4 years and lost 27 games in 2 years, he says in quotes, "That's not supposed to happen in Lexington." So again, they had two NCAA tournament wins in 4 years, and they lost 27 in 2 years. Kentucky now has one NCAA tournament win in 2 years and lost 47. So 20 more games in 4 years. So it is interesting. And then I pulled up his Wikipedia, of course. And if you look, Joe, he started coaching Kentucky in 2009, 2010 season. In his first first 6 years, they make four Final Fours.
Yeah.
In his first 6 years. Since then, they haven't made a single Final Four. So since the 2015-2016 season, they haven't made a single Final Four. They haven't even made it out of the second round since 2019. So, I mean, they're really not performing in the tournament.
No one, like, I don't even think he would say, if you put him on a lie detector, that he's a good X's and O's basketball coach. And that's the factor. But you're in a situation here where obviously, if you're the athletic director at Kentucky, you're like, oh, we fire him. And the question always becomes, who do we get? Like, you're almost saying, bring in somebody who's going to recruit in some ways worse, right? Which is crazy, but, like, I understand the reasoning of it. It almost feels like what Calipari needs is to stay and have a guy that comes in and is like sort of his, I'm on this Sopranos kick, but his consigliere, who's like, listen, here's what we're going to do. Every year, we're going to go get two kids who could be lottery picks. The rest of the recruiting class, we got to fill out with, like, we, you know, you go out and you get six potential lottery kids. They're not going to play. They're not going to stick around. And then you're going to have to figure out how to win with a new batch of kids every year. It feels like a guy like Tom Izzo. It feels like a guy like Jim Boeheim. Feels like those guys got it a little bit more. They always had one or two guys on their team that were standouts. And then they're filling out. Like, you think about that Carmelo Anthony team. Dude, what's his name? Didn't he? Like, you have Carmelo, obviously. You have Hakeem Warwick, who played in the NBA not long. And then you have Jerry McNamara, who didn't sniff the NBA and won, like, Big East Player of the Year multiple times. Like, it almost feels like to recruit too good, it's never going to hurt you in football, right? You're not going to be one and done in football. There's too many guys on the field in football. They're too big of a roster. But in basketball, when you're only starting five guys, your whole team's only 14, 15 guys, whatever it is in college basketball, you recruit seven lottery picks. You're just restarting your team every year.
But let me pose this question. Not even a question. Just a thought that I have. Dude, it's Kentucky, man. Like, we're talking about one of the greatest programs all time. They have the second most titles all time behind UCLA. I don't care who's coaching. They don't struggle to, you know, you're known for that. You're not going to struggle to get recruits. You're talking about a kid who knows what is the history of Kentucky. Just puts people, it doesn't matter who's coaching. They put guys in the NBA. You play in an NBA arena that sells out. Rupp Arena's 20,000 plus people. My point is, like, there's.
But Andy, you just said, who are they second in titles all time behind?
UCLA.
When the fuck's UCLA done? When's the last time UCLA did the thing?
Well, they made a Final Four recently. I mean, they haven't won a title since 95.
Yeah. And how about and what's their title before that one?
70s.
And it's in LA, and it's a blah, 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 and you're going to play in Pauly, and you go in there, and John Wooden's on the wall, and Bill Walton, and Kareem, and you got Love, and Westbrook, and all these guys who've gone in the NBA over the years. It's like, dude, it's very easy to just become a also-ran in college basketball.
I definitely would lean towards firing him, though. Now, there's the buyout issue, but it's just like, at some point, you have to produce.
The thing is, I'm not even sure you need, it would obviously help. I'm not even sure you need a great X's and O's coach. Obviously, he's won before. I'm not even sure you need a great X's and O's coach if you have the right roster. I just feel like he's maybe got overloaded rosters. No one sticks around long enough to learn to play. Listen, I can say without a doubt that there has been recent years where you look at the NBA and you're like, you know, this dude could still be at Kentucky. You look at, there's recent years in the NBA where you're like, there's no doubt about it. If De'Aaron Fox and Devin Booker and these guys were still at Kentucky, where they could still be, that they would be the champs. It's just, you're just going against teams that have played together with a bunch of 18-year-olds who met 60 days ago.
Sure. But the question then begs, how many terrible performances with this talent can you tolerate?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I don't know if you fire him, but something has to change. I would literally be there like, listen, again, and I hate to say it because, you know, John Calipari's Italian, I'm Italian, I hate to make the whole mafia thing, but like, listen, I like, Kentucky was on my underrated states list. I also hate college basketball, but if John Calipari wants me to bring him in, I'll be like, I can be that guy. Man, I think maybe we have too many good players. Maybe just, you know, have you thought about going to get like a 6'1 white kid who can shoot and will stick around until he's a senior? Like, might be nice to have.
Yeah.
There certainly needs to be a change in attitude. But what's crazy is telling the guy, hey, stop recruiting guys who are going to the stop having the best recruiting class every year.
Well, it was crazy. If you watch, so, you know, if you watch that game where they lose to Oakland, so it's a 3-14 seed. Of course, I wanted to hear what the TNT crew said. And I think Charles Barkley was right. He said, the problem with these kids, and if you watch this game, right, the white guy who I kept saying was an accountant, which apparently right. everybody was using that same joke, who had 10 threes. It's like Charles Barkley said, these guys don't play defense. And, yeah. and he goes, the problem with the 17, 18-year-old kids is when they're on the AAU circuit, nobody's looking at their defense. It's look how they can score. Look how they can shoot.
And forget the convincing 18-year-old NBA guys to like have heart and play like man up, like guard your man. Forget that, because we see that in the NBA. We see guys go to the NBA and it takes, I mean, this is sort of what's happened with the Knicks team is like Tom Thibodeau has, if you're not committed to playing defense, like you're gone, and he'll just like find a guy who is, because he's like, this is the way we're going to do it. And like Jalen Brunson is a terrible defender essentially, but he's like kind of committed to playing it. But the next level of it is like, you're not teaching them team defense again, because that takes a minute. It takes a minute to teach guys a team defense philosophy, and you don't even have them for a minute. So like, I'm not even putting it on him to be like, oh, you're not motivating these guys to like show what they can do defensively, like in a one-on-one situation, because I just feel like that's pretty hard to do just with like young elite athletes in general, because everybody's worried about scoring and upping their draft stock and blah, 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 blah. But you just have no opportunity to teach them team defense.
Yeah.
So it is a tough decision. Like, I don't know what I would like. I think the answer is somewhere in between. But like, if they fired him and were like, hey, we're going to go get it, then the question becomes, who do you go get? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have it in front of me. I assume since he took over the team, there's no way any school's produced more lottery picks or more first round picks than
Kentucky. No way. No way.
Like there's no way it's even close.
No. But it's different than like what Saban does at Alabama. Those guys are there. You're not coming in for spring football and leaving in January.
Well, they're there 2 years at least.
Yeah, they're there 2 years at least. A lot of them are even there 3 years just because they've got a guy in front of them that's also going to the NFL. I mean, you think about, like we've talked about it before with like the running backs that just go, boom, you're sitting behind Clinton Portis. You're sitting behind Frank Gore. You're sitting behind this guy. You're sitting behind Willis McGahee. You're sitting behind Jeremy Shockey. Now you're sitting behind Kellen Winslow. You're sitting behind Greg Olsen. It's like, it's a boom, boom, boom. Now you're like learning. You're going up against this guy in practice. You're going up against you're all in a tight end room. Like, these guys are getting a chance to play because they're being promised that. Come here and play day one. You'll be in the NBA. You'll be in the NBA in 16 months if you sign with me. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
I bet one, they fire two, three know. Of these guys, and then I think that would be the philosophy change that could help.
Well, if you actually want to win, something's got to change. Because whatever the formula now is definitely not working.
If you look at, like I said, an Izzo or a Boeheim, it feels like they actively didn't do that, right? Like, it feels like they could have more blue chippers and like actively didn't in a way.
Maybe. Yeah. It's just wild because, again, they're losing to like a 14 seed Oakland, yeah. a 15 seed St. Peter's. Like, sure. Kentucky's going down recently to small schools that are, you know, the seeding
which
is not
why
high
if
at
you,
all.
Which is why if you fired him, it's completely justified.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they do. I'll tell you one thing. The Kentucky team would handle Jokic and Caitlin Clark's Iowa team.
They couldn't even handle a fucking accountant. They couldn't even handle a kid's name who we don't know. It's insane.
Yeah, I was kind of being sarcastic there.
By the way, another you'll like this tidbit. I said it in the preamble to our thing. We kept calling him Jameson Winston for the whole episode. For the whole throwback episode, we called him Jameson Winston.
The on purpose?
No.
Wait, like, so you're telling me in episode 12 of Dirty Sports, the denting episode, we kept calling him Jameson?
And he had already won the Heisman. I was like, we were already off college football.
I had a brain injury. That was my excuse. What the hell was your excuse?
My excuse was I've never cared. It's been 20 years since I cared about college football.
We were calling him Jameson?
Since Rocket Ishmael was at Notre Dame was the last time that I cared about college football. I said, what's so funny is like, now you think about it, how many times we've said Jameis, how many conversations you had about Jameis on this show? We didn't even know the dude's name.
That's hilarious. Did you see that did you see that Netflix is going to do another version of the quarterback, but with wide receivers?
I saw it on the rundown. I didn't read the thing, but I saw it on the rundown. Now, I had heard that there was like, I'm assuming it's the same team. It's like, is it Peyton? Is it Omaha Sports?
Correct.
So I did hear throughout the year that they were having a hard time finding quarterbacks that wanted to participate.
I kind of like the remix
receivers
version.
Better.
Yeah. So they're going to
do.
You know, last one was
title no fucking Kirk Cousins in his Home Depot designed man cave. This so fucking racks on the wall.
Yeah. We're going to have Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, George Kittle, and Debo Samuel.
Wow, it makes a tight end in there too.
Yeah. So
and
once
it's just
again,
be called receiver.
Yeah, it's gonna be called receiver. They filmed last year. So this was 2023 season.
Right. Great.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. I much prefer that.
Maybe Justin Jefferson
quarterback was Dorkfest.
Yeah, maybe he talks shit about Kirk Cousins in this.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to long snapper.
Yeah, when they just start scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I'm looking Holder. Forward to wedge buster.
Yeah.
Water boy.
Yeah. Gunner. They're like, what goes through the mind of a gunner? He's like, really, it's just don't step out of bounds.
Assistant
but then also,
DB
I do
coach.
Step out of bounds a lot. And then when the ball's bouncing, I'm always like, hey, how do punts work? Because sometimes I'll touch it when I'm not supposed to. And then sometimes I don't touch it when I am supposed to.
I'm looking forward to Deflator, the guy who's designated to deflate. That'll just be about the Patriots.
Yeah.
But yeah, this should be a much better, as far as from interesting perspective, a much better series.
I have a feeling it's going to be a whole lot. It's going to be like quarterback meets Cribs. They're like, he's like, welcome to receiver. I'm Devontae Adams, and this is my Lambo. And you're like, oh, cool.
No, but he's on the Raiders.
Right. Kirk Cousins was going taking us to Super Church and his man cave.
I only got through a couple episodes. I was so bored. Yeah. I only got through a couple episodes.
Yeah. I tried to make my girlfriend watch with me because I was like, oh, this is the kind, like, she doesn't, you know, she's not a big sports fan, but I was like, oh, this is the kind of thing where she'll like, maybe she'll be into it. She was like, every single one of these guys is a fucking dork. And I was like, I know.
Yeah.
I was like, Patrick Mahomes is the best player maybe the NFL's ever seen. She's like, he's a dork, and I hate his fucking wife. I was like, you get it. Like,
exactly. Well, that's
You're the John Calipari of scouting talent. You figured that out in 3 seconds.
Well, that's the thing, especially if you bring in somebody who's not into it, like Like my girlfriend and I, we'll watch Hard Knocks. She gets into that. She was, even the Patriots one for her was like, you're getting too, you know, when it gets too sportsy, so to speak. But we did just finish Quiet on the Set.
Which one was that?
That's the one that exposes Nickelodeon and all the.
Oh, yeah.
The pedos and all the showrunner who also right. ironically has the same name as, it's not spelled the same, but from Washington's old owner, another Dan Snyder. Snyder, it's not the same. It's Snyder versus Snyder, but you get the point. That's wild. You should watch it.
Yeah, I've seen clips of it on the TikTok. I'll check it out. I'm behind. I still haven't watched like. I'm so.
I mean, look, all of them. It's not that like it's not. You're not gonna be surprised. And to be honest, I didn't like the way it ended. It's four episodes, but like, it's just funny to me again that you're like, dude, the lack of accountability.
Yeah.
From Nickelodeon to whoever's in charge, you're just like.
To the parents and.
But like it's in like I don't know if it's because the times were different. I mean, the one guy on there literally was sexually assaulting and raping Drake Bell for a long period of time and got 16 months in jail.
It's crazy.
Like if you raped a kid in 2024, like full sodomy, like you're locked up for life, right? You should be.
I'm kind of glad I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty, but you know what's crazy about it? You know, here's why you got to watch it. Like, Joe, I was doing Blinking Guy meme the whole time. This Dan Snyder guy was known for.
Again, I love this, by the way. I love that you will never get Snyder right. Oh, this is Dan Schneider.
And you're right. This
meanwhile, you've been calling Dan Snyder of the Washington team, Dan Schneider, for as long as we've been doing this podcast. True. Now you actually have a Dan Schneider and you just dropped a Dan Snyder on me?
He was doing all this sexual innuendo for the kids shows. And you watch it and I'm just doing full blink. Like I'm talking out loud to the screen. I'm like, what? You know, because obviously you and I were too old. This was past our time.
Right.
But you're like watching these scenes.
This shit wasn't happening on the set of Hey Dude.
No. Even a Saved by the Bell. Yeah. Like these scenes where it's, and they keep saying like multiple different things. Like this is a cum shot. Let's call it what it is. Where Ariana Grande in the show she was on, it's like the water's going all over her face. And it's like, whoa. No one stepped in and was like, guys. Like, let's talk about how this looks on a 12-year-old girl's face. Like, what are we doing here? It's pretty wild.
And your girlfriend, your girlfriend was, she was like, we got to watch this. I'm assuming you guys do like a.
No, it was me. Like, all right,
really?
Same thing. I saw something on TikTok and I was like, oh.
Interesting.
But it was also more of her time.
Right.
Right. Like she just turned. She just turned 35. So it's like she's around the age closer to a lot of the stars. So it's like, oh, I grew up watching that or whatever it is.
My girlfriend's 33 and I know that this is going to be on tonight, tomorrow. This is like, it'll be airing in our house within days. And I know that because here's what I just prepped her for. This is a hilarious conversation, by the way. And you and I have to talk about this, although it does look like rain potentially in New York Thursday morning, but obviously opening day is Thursday. The Mets opening day is supposed to start 10 a.m. My time, basically the same time where we would do the podcast on Thursday. And I told her, I was like, so just FYI. And she's like, what? I was like, baseball starts Thursday. I was like, so basically every day from Thursday until October, like I'll be watching the Mets game. And this was her response. Every Thursday? And I was like, no, not every Thursday, every day. I was like, 4 out of 5 days from Thursday until October, I'll be watching Mets baseball. And she's like, how many games do they play? I was like, 162. And she was like, no. absolutely not. I was like, no, yeah. And she's like, I feel like it wasn't that long last year. I was like, the Mets sucked last year. So I started tuning out in like August. But yeah, she's like, her first reaction was so hilarious to me. Every Thursday? No, babe. Every single day.
You'll watch the Mets every single day.
Well, you know me. We've talked about it on the show. But yeah, like if I'm not doing anything else, it'll be on even if it's background. You know, it starts here. Your typical Mets game starts here at 4 o'clock. It basically becomes happy hour. I put it on. Maybe I'm finishing up my day work on the computer. I'm cracking a beer. Game's on in the background. I'll watch it, you know. I'll do other stuff. If I've got a show, at some point I'll take a shower while it's on in the background. And then, you know, at 7, I'll head out to a show or whatever. But, like, yeah, every day of the baseball season, the Mets are on, in at least on in the background. Now, I have the creation shed where I record the podcast. And I do have – I actually have your old TV. Remember the TV you gave me?
Yeah, it's Samsung.
Your old TV is now the shed TV.
Nice.
So it's on the floor. I put it on this desk right where my computer is right here when I'm not recording the pod. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of 4 o'clock happy hour starts in the shed. I feel like I'm watching a lot of Mets games in the shed, but that's okay. I actually kind of love it in the shed. Shout out to the good folks at Rabbit Air who gave me this beautiful piece of technology, this air purifier. I was in here the other night, Andy. She was out of town for the night. I made myself some chicken parm, bought myself a bottle of red wine, and then I came out here with the second half of my bottle of red wine and a cigar, and I watched the new Roadhouse, which is, Andy, let me tell you, the worst fucking movie I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you know, I saw what you posted on Substack about it, and my brother, I watched the trailer. We watched it here. Of course, Brittany has not seen the original. And then my brother texted me, same thing. He texted me Saturday. He's like, hey, do you want to come over and watch the new Roadhouse? And I was like, I'm in Yellow Springs for the night. But then the next day he said it was absolutely horrible, which I assumed
it was beyond horrible.
I mean, Conor McGregor in the trailer, his acting looks like it's
Conor McGregor is the worst actor I've ever seen. He's not even like, if he, you know, The Room, remember the movie, The Room, the worst movie of all time. If Conor McGregor stepped on the set of The Room, they'd be like, dude, we can't, like, you just don't know what you're doing. Like,
why didn't he just be himself? I can tell. From
I don't
the
know. He put on some sort of like weird accent. I was like, why? You can just be Irish.
Just be yourself.
And then also just like give Conor McGregor. I would have just given Conor McGregor line reads of the thing. I'd be like, I'm going to say it just like me right after I say it. It was like they gave him word jumbles or whatever, and he had to like figure out how to put together sentences.
Is he the single worst?
What's that?
Like, he's like one of the leads?
No, but he's like the baddie who comes in to like fight. Like, he's like the guy they have to like call in to like Jake Gyllenhaal. He's horrific. Then Jake Gyllenhaal is like surprisingly like the only good acting, obviously. I mean, he's a good actor. He's an A-list actor. He's good in it, but there's zero character development. He like shows up to town on a bus and goes into a bookstore because it's like right by the bookstore, right by the bus stop, and some girls in there and gives him a book. And now suddenly, like, he'll do anything for this bookstore. He's ready to fight 40 people. And then fucking you're like, dude, like, you know, in the Roadhouse, there's like the old guy, and then they burn down the old guy's like hardware store or whatever the fuck it was. Yeah. It's like there's a development there. He just like meets this girl, and like 3 seconds later, he's like, I'm a ride or die for this girl at this bookstore. Then actually, I think the funniest thing is, and I feel like I know exactly how this happened. Like in all these movies, they're like, all right, let's find some like hot, unnamed starlet, right? And we'll just like make her the female lead because she won't cost us that much money, but she's like hot, you know? So they get this girl. She's foreign. I look her up on Wikipedia. She's Portuguese. And I'm like, okay, great. Then the plot takes you to the point where her dad is the sheriff in Florida. And because she's Portuguese, I'm assuming they found a Portuguese actor to portray her father so that it made sense. And I'm like, in what world is some Portuguese guy who came over when he was in his 40s, the sheriff of a Florida town? It's very weird for him to be like talking to the sheriff. And he's like, as he's fully Portuguese. And I'm like, was no one in the writer's room like, just say she grew up with her mother? Like, just say, like, her dad's from Florida, her mom's Portuguese. Like, what are we doing here? It was a ludicrous movie. No characters.
It sounds like a good one to laugh at, though.
Oh my God. It was almost not even good enough to laugh at, because you're watching and you're like, what's happening now? This guy's now willing to die for this bar? Like, for the guy. Also, here, so of course they did like a UFC thing, because that's how so Jake Gyllenhaal's character is a UFC fighter who, in a UFC fight, knocks a guy out, but then he's so like rage crazy that he like sheds the ref and keeps beating the guy, and the guy maybe like died or something like that. So now Jake Gyllenhaal has been kicked out of the UFC for murdering a guy, but was not arrested for murdering a guy. Like, either he committed a crime or he didn't. Like, the UFC would never kick you out for beating the shit out of a guy, but the cops would certainly arrest you if you murdered a dude in a ring. So now Jake Gyllenhaal's like on the run because he can't fight in the UFC anymore, but also not on the run from the law. So Jake Gyllenhaal is a murderer on the loose, basically. But no one's looking for him because it happened in the octagon or something. It's like the plot holes are enormous.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I'll have to check it out then.
I like Doug Liman directed it, who's directed a lot of things. You know, Swingers, The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper.
But again, man, like, is this classic Hollywood? The lack of creativity, it's sad. Roadhouse was a classic. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah, exactly.
They mess everything up so many times.
And listen,
times.
Roadhouse isn't like an amazing movie, but no. Like Roadhouse is like, Roadhouse is that
classic.
Yeah, perfect 80s bad, but like also there's character development in it. You know what I mean? In this, everything just like happens. And you're like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And that's really saying something.
That is. So a lot has happened since our last episode with the Shohei Ohtani bet game.
Jeez.
And he's going to speak today, finally. Can't wait for this. But not until, I think, 5:45 Eastern time.
And I assume not through his translator.
This is wild now. Now, there's
I sent you this tweet the other day, right?
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani sent eight. I mean, now all this stuff is also like, what's true, what's not true. Obviously, there's an investigation. Shohei Ohtani sent 8 or 9 wire transfers to iPay. iPay admitted it to the ESPN reporter. Then Ohtani found out. iPay immediately went back to ESPN and said that he lied and Ohtani knew nothing. And the guy who tweeted it calls, I call bullshit. This according to First Take going on right now. You're like, what?
Well, there's a lot. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of theories, not even theories, that like, was he making the bets is basically what we're at. Was Ohtani himself making the bets?
Was Ohtani making the bet? Like there's certainly levels here. Was Ohtani making the bets? Did Ohtani know about it? The initial report of there was an investigation about Ohtani and gambling. And then the first follow-up to that report being this guy was stealing money from him to make these bets. You're like,
but that's then weird. At first this guy said Ohtani okayed the payoff, that he would give him his money. Then the guy retracted that. His translator retracted, oh no, I stole it from him. And then he made those weird comments that I read, I'm terrible at gambling. None of it adds up.
No.
First of all, and these are stereotypes, but I want to bring this up.
These are stereotypes. Here we go. Thank God this is behind the paywall.
The loyalty within the Japanese culture is very good. Right? Like I'm serious. So
sure,
within Japanese culture, the loyalty.
It's a good stereotype. That's okay.
Yeah. It's a positive stereotype.
Yeah.
So
I thought you were gonna be like, the Japanese people, they love their gambling. They'll gamble on anything.
No, but my point is, I'm not saying this could have not. I'm saying this couldn't have, like, could not have happened. Like, it could have happened for sure. I'm just saying his translator, who's been with him the minute he came to the United States and played for the Angels, is going to turn on him and steal his money.
Right.
Again, a culture that really values.
Also, loyalty. A guy who's getting paid six figures just from the team to be his translator, then whatever he's getting from Otani. You're a millionaire translator because you're the translator for the number one richest athlete in American sports history. And you're like, yeah, maybe if I steal $20 million from him, no one will notice. Like, there's just. It's so clear that the story is not as it's trying to be presented by whoever is trying to present it, whether it be Major League Baseball, Otani, the Dodgers, whatever. Like, it is just simply not as it seems so far. We're going to get to the bottom of it to some degree. Now, my manager, shout out to Randy, she sent me a thing because I had talked about this before. In fact, I did a joke about it on the sports show that I did at the lab. Otani just like randomly got married out of nowhere. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I've seen that now.
And now they're saying, did they do like the get married so she can't testify against him thing?
Ooh, I didn't
see spousal, that. The spousal privilege, which obviously everybody who's, as a guy who's rewatching The Sopranos, there's an episode of The Sopranos where Adriana suggests that to Chris. Because she doesn't want to have to testify against him. I actually also know about this. I'm not going to name names, but like somebody I know in the Italian New York thing too, randomly got like married on a whim, thinking that would help, and then found out that it wouldn't because of blah blah blah. So if you know about a crime before it happened, before you were married, but that's another theory that's being thrown out there because. He didn't even say, like, I'm engaged. He just showed up to spring training and was like, I'm married. And they were like, you are?
Yeah. Something's not adding up. There's a lot of things, actually.
Things aren't adding up. Yeah.
And baseball is so bad at handling this stuff. We already know they're going to mess this up. They already are messing this up.
Yeah. Dodgers fans spinning, right? Dodgers fans can't handle it. Oh, guys getting stolen from, and all you guys want to do is make gambling jokes. Like, you guys can't be this stupid. This is almost as reckless as like claiming that Chase Utley knee bombing someone was a slide. Like, this is almost on par with that. No, nothing to see here. Just Shohei Ohtani not knowing that he was losing millions of dollars.
But here's the thing. Here's the great thing about the age we live in with technology and access to stuff. If Ohtani, in fact, was gambling, that will come out at some point.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to come out now. It will come out at some point if that was actually Ohtani the one placing the bets. It will come out.
I need this to be season 6 of Tokyo Vice. I needed Jake Adelstein to be talking to Tozawa about Shohei Ohtani's gambling habits.
If it was really him, they're in such a shitstorm.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? He's such a big star, though, that I feel like it will get it. Like, he's not missing. Here's my prediction. He's not missing 25 games over this.
I mean, baseball is literally known for banning the guy with the most hits for gambling.
Yeah.
And even let me put out a reminder to everybody listening. His translator, when he confessed to everything, was sure to say, I never gambled on baseball, which is like, Why would you even say that?
Yeah.
If you didn't, you wouldn't have to say that. You would just say, I shouldn't have gambled.
Yeah.
None of it adds up. It's all sketchy.
Imagine being a degenerate gambler, stealing millions from your employer to pay your debts, knowing you're in such a hole that you have to do heist on your employer's money. And then just being like, but I'm not going to bet on the sport I know the most about. That would be wrong.
Yeah. And if he stole, why isn't he criminally charged? $4.5 million.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani has not requested that this guy be arrested.
Right.
None of it adds up. And I can't wait for Rob Manfred to completely botch this.
Yeah. Rob Manfred's like, we're going to address everything in a press conference today on intentional talk on MLB.tv presented by FanDuel. We hope you'll join us.
Well, see, that's the thing, Joe, that a lot of people are saying. Think about it. ESPN has ESPN Bet.
PrizePicks already has the over 4.5 days until Manfred does a press conference about it. You can pick over or under.
No, but what I was going to get to was ESPN is financially vested in gambling.
Yeah.
Bleacher Report, financial. They all have deals. The Athletic, they all have deals with gambling agencies. My point is, are their reporters, are their journalists going to actually accurately report this? Hell no. Fuck no.
No way.
Because that goes against their money. What a mess. I can't wait to hear what Ohtani says today through his translator, which is even funnier.
I think we should take some of the new DSPN Substack subscriber money and send some to Yoshi and send him home to do some investigative reporting. Be like, there's got to be like a murdered porn star site that you can visit while you're in Japan. But also, we need to get to the bottom of this Ohtani story. Although I don't think he's allowed in Japan.
No, I don't think he is either.
Damn. Let's find somebody else.
Or did he go back recently?
I don't remember.
Sometime in the last few years. Yoshi should be his translator. Can you imagine Yoshi as Ohtani's translator?
Can you imagine 5 years from now when there's a second scandal that Yoshi has been embezzling money from Ohtani and now he's subscribed to all of the pay porn sites? He's just Yoshi Obayashi fucking stole $4.5 million from Ohtani and subscribed to 1,500 OnlyFans accounts. Every time the Dodgers played the Padres, he would slip across the border to the Hong Kong club where he spent upwards of 8 trillion yen of Ohtani's money at a brothel.
Yeah, how many hookers could Yoshi get for $4.5 million? Because we all know he's doing the cheap girls. Like, I'm talking of the girls he normally gets.
He's like, I'm actually ready for this. I just came out of a scientific study of the effects of FanDuel on the human brain.
Weigh in on this matter. 310-359-8365. That's our hotline. You guys know where to find us. We're on Substack.
DirtySports.com.
And like I said, man, if you're like, hey, I don't want to fork over money, dude, no problem. Just subscribe. It's free. You can subscribe for free.
Subscribe for free and give us the opportunity to lure you over to the dark side, to the paid side of Substack. But honestly, Andy, you know, we talked about it to start the show. It feels like it's something that we'll talk about for a couple weeks until as people just start getting acclimated with the new thing. I think, you know, we talked about it last episode, and I'll say it again. And I think you agree. It does feel like a new era. We're doing different stuff. There's some really cool things that are happening. And again, it's just like a more trusted community, like where I feel comfortable. I would have never put out a DS throwback just like willy nilly up on our whatever, but here it is. It's out there for you guys. Come over, subscribe. A lot of cool things going to be happening. We're excited about it. Substack's been super supportive. We're excited about their support. Hopefully you'll see us popping up on other podcasts to promote it. Hopefully you'll see some people maybe you haven't seen on the Dirty Sports before to talk about new stuff. And yeah, follow us over there. Follow me at Joe Prano on everything. If you're in the Vegas area, I'll be at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club in Vegas this Friday and Saturday. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday in Vegas. I'll see you down there. And then, of course, April 25th, New York Comedy Club, Stamford. The Big East's own Pizzastaro will be featuring. Former Venice, former mayor of Venice, Bronson Jones, will be hosting. Come see me April 25th, New York Comedy Club, Stamford. Get your tickets now. Premium tickets are going fast. There should be tickets to be had for a while. But if you're a dirtball that's in New York or Connecticut and you want premium seats, get them while you can. And yeah, like I said, follow me on everything and follow us on Substack.
Cool. All right, guys. That is our show. We'll be back on Thursday. Have a great start to your week. And as always, stay dirty.